Hello, this is Kalyani Velath. Welcome to the Net Complete audio course.
Greco-Roman period, chapter 1.
The Greco-Roman period means the Greek and Roman period. According to our syllabus, today we are talking about the Greek period. Tomorrow we'll revise and start with the Roman period. Okay, now we thought we are going to do British literature. Then why am I talking about Greek and Roman? Greek and Roman are other countries. Rome is in Italy. Greece is a group of islands. Those are different countries. Because the modern British literature started with a revival of Greek and Roman literatures. Renaissance, it is called. Modern British literature began with Renaissance. And it is a revival of Greek and Roman classical literature that we see in the Renaissance. That is why we talk about Greek and Roman literature at first. Now, Greek, ancient Greek period, like India and China, these are two different countries, UK and Greece. Okay, Greece, ancient times in Greece, what happened? Now, when I say ancient, I will explain to you one thing. Listen to this. Suppose, I will draw in another color. Yeah. Suppose this is the timeline of history. Timeline of history. Okay. Please stop trying to record and do such things. Please just listen to me. Okay. When we are living in 2024 here. Isn't it? This is year 2024. I will write properly with this thing. We are in the year 2024. I know that many people will know all these things, but just to set the scene properly, this is 2024. 2024 years ago, Christ was born. In about 1 AD, it is not exact, but in about 1 AD, 1 means 1 year, year 1. This is year 2024. Like that, in 1 AD, Christ was born. Did you understand? Before that, in 1 BC, the year before that is 1 BC. I know that many people know all these things, but I'm just setting the scene. Okay, 2024 years ago came 1 AD. The year before that is 1 BC. All right. And before that came 2 BC, 3 BC. It's ulta. And then 99 BC. Like that, on this side, we have 99 AD. Did you understand? AD means Anno Domini, the year of the Lord. BC means before Christ. 1 to 99 BC is first century AD. Did you understand? The first century is year 1 to 99. This is first century. And like that, there is first century AD also. First century BC and first century AD. First century BC and first century AD also is there. Clear, everybody? Even those who know a lot of things might have confusion regarding this. First century BC and first century AD, same. 1 to 99. Like that, from 100, year 100 to 199 is second century BC. Okay, I will type here. 1 to 99 is first century. Okay, like that. 100 to 199 year, that is second century. Got it? Then 200 to 299 year, that is third century. Okay, like that. In very ancient period, in 11th century, Trojan War took place. The war between Greece and Troy took place in 11th century. Did you understand? 11th century when? 11th century BC. 11th century BC is Trojan War. And then 200 years later, 8th century BC, lived Homer. Okay? And after that, 6th century BC, started Greek classicism. I know that some of you will still have doubts, but don't worry. I will explain this several times in the class. Okay? Everything I will explain several times. Even if you miss one time, you will get it another time. So don't worry at all. 6th century BC, what started? Greek classicism started. That is what we are going to talk about today. That means 600 years. Century means 100 years. Millennium means 1000 years. Okay? Those who are from Hindi medium, etc., you can learn like this. Because in the exam, they will ask in English, as Zina ma'am said. So, 6th century BC, that means 600 years before Christ, Greek classicism started. In the period called Greek classicism, all this is general knowledge. This is not English literature. This is general knowledge. Anybody who has studied in school should know all these things. If you don't know, don't worry. Now we are learning. So, Greek classicism, it is in that period that who all lived, the ancient writer of tragedies, Aeschylus. Yesterday, Rushati was talking about Aeschylus. Rushati pronounces Aeschylus. That also, that's American. Aeschylus or Aeschylus, both are correct. Aeschylus or Aeschylus is the father of tragedy. Did you understand? Tragedy, father is Aeschylus or Aeschylus. Aeschylus and other tragedians, comedy writers lived at this time. Then everybody knows about Plato. Then everybody knows about Aristotle. Okay, when I teach you, I will teach in a medium level. Means if you are total beginner, you will get it from me, but you will have to read extra. You will have to read extra. You will have to watch the video again. Because there are many people in this class who have passed NET, who know all these things clearly. They are bearing with me when I teach basics because they already know it. So those who are beginners should read extra. And those who are very advanced people also should read extra because they should know advanced things about Greek classicism. So Greek classicism is 6th century onwards. Plato, Aristotle, then Aeschylus, they were all important writers of this time. Don't worry, I will tell you all this in the coming slides. I'm clearing the screen now. Okay, and now Greek classicism, ancient Greece. They go, ancient Greece. We are talking about Greek classicism now. But in ancient Greece, there are three periods, archaic, classical, and Hellenistic. Ancient Greece, archaic period, classical period, Hellenistic period. Archaic is very ancient period, the time of Homer. Archaic is the time of Homer, very ancient. Remember, 8th century BC. Before that also Greece was there, but it was like dark ages. Nothing was there. We don't know history. It is prehistoric times. It is called prehistoric times. And time of Homer is 8th century BC. Did you understand? Time of Homer, which is the time when nothing was there. It was still very primitive. Mythology, it was still Homer. And before that, dark ages, ignorance, injustice. Human beings were just very primitive people, right? And in the 6th century, we began the classical period. 6th century BC is classical period. 6th century BC is the period of classicism, the flowering of arts and letters. Arts means painting and other arts, performing arts. Letters means what? Letters means literature. Literature was also flowering at this time. And it is the Hellenistic period, means classicism ended and first century BC has dawned. First century BC has dawned. In that time, Greece is politically declining. Greece is ruled over by Rome. Political decline means ruled over by Rome. Greece is politically ruled over by Rome. Did you understand? And Greece declined politically. Greece's culture is still very dominant. Greece's culture is still inspiring Romans. So the Romans are ruling Greece, but the Romans are following Greek culture. Did you understand? Greece and Rome are all in the Mediterranean region. Do you know the Mediterranean region? This is Europe. Okay, I'm just drawing the map off by myself. When you look at the world map, this side is Europe. This side, it is Asia. Do you know? And below that, here it is Africa. And here there is a sea. This sea is called Mediterranean Sea. This sea is called Mediterranean Sea. in the Mediterranean Sea, here there is Italy. Rome is here. And here there are the islands called Greece. Inside the Mediterranean Sea, here there are the islands called Greece. And here there is Egypt, the country Egypt. Egypt comes here. Egypt is in Africa. Can you all see the screen? So this region is Roman civilization. This is Greek civilization. And this is Egyptian civilization. Mediterranean Sea, that Mediterranean region is the cradle of all these civilizations. Did you understand? This is the region where all these things happened. The Hellenistic period means the Romans from here came and ruled over Greece. The Romans came and ruled over Greece. Greece has declined politically, but culturally still very dominant. Okay, I am clearing my drawings now. Archaic period, classical period, Hellenistic period. That is why I depicted this like a picture here. Now, archaic period, the period about 9th century BC to 5th century. If every single point I'm saying you don't remember or you can't clearly understand, it's okay. Okay, this is like a vast history that I'm telling you. Every single, or like a book that you're reading. If every single point is not clear in a book, it's fine, right? If you get the general idea, it's fine. So look at the places here in Greece, Athens, Sparta, Corinth. All these are places in Greece. Okay, in the archaic period, nation states or city states are formed. City states are small, small countries in Greece. They are constantly at war with one another. They are ruled by tyrants. And the Persians who came from Asia, from the Middle East, they were their common enemy. Actually, Europe is this side. Imagine this is the map. Europe is this side. Asia is this side. And here there is the Middle East. Middle East means the Gulf countries. And the Middle East countries have Persians. They are called Persians at that time. The Persians were the common enemies at this time of the Greeks. Did you understand? At this time, in archaic period, before the classical period, we have Homer, Hesiod, Sappho. All these are there in your encyclopedia. Sometimes more points also will be there in the encyclopedia. However, the PDF might sometimes have more points. You know why? Because whenever I am revising the encyclopedia, I will add the new ideas, the new information to the PDF also, so that you will get it. Okay, so more information can be there in PDF also. Don't get worried about all that. What are the important works of Homer? Iliad and Odyssey. They are both epics like Ramayana and Mahabharata. Like Mahabharata and Ramayana, we have Iliad and Odyssey. They are epics. Now, in the NET exam, they will not ask you who wrote Iliad and Odyssey, etc. They will ask you about retellings of Iliad, adaptations of Iliad. Did you understand Odyssey? Everybody knows that for your benefit. Everybody knows that Iliad and Odyssey are two important epics. And everybody also knows that James Joyce wrote Ulysses. Isn't it? Everybody knows that James Joyce wrote Ulysses. That is a novel which is based on Odyssey. If you are a beginner and you don't know that James Joyce wrote Ulysses, no problem. You should write down and look it up. Okay. James Joyce wrote Ulysses. Also before that, Alfred Tennyson wrote Ulysses. It is a poem. Alfred Tennyson's Ulysses is a poem, isn't it? That also many of you know. But there are even more works based on Odyssey and Iliad. Did you know, I am telling the people who know a lot of things already, if beginners don't know, don't worry. Did you know that David Malouf wrote Ransom based on Iliad? Some of you might know. I know. David Malouf wrote Ransom based on Iliad. Do you know that David Malouf is an Australian writer? Did you know Derek Walcott wrote? What did Derek Walcott write? Homeros. I'm sure many of you know that. Homeros is an epic poem Derek Walcott wrote based on Ulysses. Sorry, based on Iliad. Did you understand? So like this, new works have come into being. There is Pat Barker. Pat Barker wrote Women of Troy. Briseis, that is the name of the protagonist. Pat Barker wrote Women of Troy. You should look it up if you don't know. Many of you would also know Madeline Miller. Yo, Madeline Miller wrote many works, including Circe. Many, many novels are there that Madeline Miller wrote based on Iliad and Odyssey. Did you understand? So these are all important. The adaptations, the retellings, the modern reinterpretations, etc. I have given you some books to look up. You should look up and read extra if you have time. All right, I am clearing the screen. When I write like this, if you want to look at it again, there is always the recording. Okay, so the archaic period, we already know. In the archaic period, Homer lived. Homer was the greatest of the Greek epic poets. Nothing definite is known about his life. We don't know for sure how he lived. Even though we don't know anything, it is true that many biographies of Homer have been written. There are many biographies of Homer. Many people have written biographies. Biographies means lives. Lives means biographies of Homer. Biography. Okay. And Homer is believed to have been a blind wandering minstrel. Homer is a blind wandering minstrel. What do you mean by minstrel? Minstrel means poet. Minstrel means poet. Homer was a blind wandering poet. Now, let us talk about his epics, the Iliad. The Iliad is an epic. As you know, as I already told you, the Iliad is an epic. It is one of the oldest existing works in Western literature. What is the word for existing? Extant. It is one of the oldest extant works. It is set against the Trojan War, as you already know. And in the last part of Trojan War, Agamemnon and Achilles are fighting. Agamemnon and Achilles both are Greek heroes. Okay, Agamemnon and Achilles are both Greek heroes. Did you understand? The Trojan War took place for 10 years. The Trojan War took place over a period of 10 years. But in this period of 10 years, many things happened. All that is not depicted in real time. It is all depicted in flashback, through stories, people remembering it, people talking about it like that. Because the focus, the present time is the last 1 week when Agamemnon and Achilles are fighting. Achilles is very angry with Agamemnon because Agamemnon wanted a servant girl whom Achilles loved very much. Achilles is saying, "I will not fight. I refuse to fight." At that time, Greeks are so shocked because Greeks will lose the war. Greeks will not win the war if Achilles is not fighting. At that time, Achilles had a friend called Patroclus. Achilles had a friend called Patroclus. You know what happened to this Patroclus? This Patroclus is wounded. Ayo, this Patroclus is wounded. By whom? By the Trojan hero Hector, the Trojan prince. What is the name of the Trojan prince? His name is Hector. Patroclus is wounded. So Achilles is very angry. He wants to kill Hector. So he goes and fights in the war, kills Hector and drags Hector's dead body. See, he is killing Hector. So much fighting. Killing Hector. Dragging Hector's dead body through the battlefield. Baap re, itna gussa. So much anger. Achilles is so angry. And he dragged the dead body of Hector. All this is depicted at the end of Iliad. Itna gussa chaniye. You should not have so much anger. That is the meaning of this story, isn't it? Yeah. Now, dekho what happened. After the Trojan War got over, 10 years over, after that, Odysseus or Ulysses. Odysseus is the Greek name. Ulysses is the Latin name. Odysseus or Ulysses is going back to his home in Ithaca. He is going back to his home in Ithaca. And he took 10 more years to reach home. because he had to fight many people on the way. He was imprisoned. There are lots of things happened. Years passed, and finally he is reaching Ithaca. At that time, Ulysses has a son. Ulysses' wife is Penelope. Many of you know that. Penelope is his wife. Telemachus is his son. How do we all know? Because in James Joyce's Ulysses, characters are modeled on Odysseus, Penelope, Telemachus. I know that everybody knows this in James Joyce's Ulysses. James Joyce's Ulysses, okay, novel. Leopold Bloom represents Ulysses, right? Penelope is represented by Molly Bloom, his wife. And Telemachus is represented by Stephen Dedalus. Stephen Dedalus is not their son, but he is like their son, like Leopold Bloom's son. They meet on 16th June 1904, that day in Dublin. That is the story of James Joyce's Ulysses. These characters are in James Joyce's Ulysses. Stephen Dedalus is also there in a portrait of the artist as a young man. Do you remember? Yes. So this is the story of Odyssey and Iliad. Iliad and Odyssey. Okay, in a nutshell. Or more is there. We will understand more in coming days in different ways. So after Homer, there is classical period. In the classical period, many city-states are there, and Athens is the most powerful city-state. Athens is the most powerful Greek city-state, ruled by the ruler Pericles. Pericles is the name of the king. And at this time, there was lots of arts and letters. Painting flourished, literature flourished, poetry flourished, philosophy flourished, political thought, aesthetics, physics, ethics, linguistics, biology. Oh my God, so many disciplines developed in Athens at this time. Isn't it amazing? All that we are learning today in paper one and paper two actually started in Athens. Everything we need for paper one and paper two started in Athens only. Okay? And the rise of philosophy happened. There were pre-Socratic philosophers at this time. Many philosophers who existed, who lived before Socrates itself. Some of them you know very well. You must have heard of Pythagoras. Pythagoras' theorem is there, right? In your paper one, you might need it. So if you don't know, you should Google all these things. All these were different philosophers who lived before Socrates. Then came Socrates, then Plato, then Aristotle. Okay, Heraclitus, Parmenides, etc. influenced Plato and Aristotle. Did you understand? Now, these are just names. You don't have to know all of them in detail. Remember, everybody, when I have explained something in detail, then you should know it. If I have not explained, it often means that it doesn't matter. You don't have to know. It is not very important like that. But if you have time, you should read extra. Okay? So Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle were philosophers. And then classical drama developed. Tragedy developed. Comedy developed in Athens. You all know that tragedy was associated with religious rituals. Don't you know that? It was as part of religion, right? Tragedy developed as a part of religious festival. Dionysius is the god. They go, just given here. Dionysius is the god of wine and ecstasy, of merriment. They go, and city Dionysia, that is the name of the festival. Dionysia is the festival. Dionysius is the god. And he's known as Bacchus among the Romans. Clear? In celebration of Dionysius, tragedy emerged in Athens. Okay? In the hands of whom? You all know Aeschylus. Aeschylus or Aeschylus, he is the father of tragedy. And then there is comedy. Comedy means it was originally called satire play. Satire play developed at this time. And it was always along with tragedy that satire plays were written. You know, in the Greek times, in festivals of Dionysia, three trilogies or three tragedies. That means trilogy. Three tragedies plus one satire play. Like that, they wrote. So three tragedies and one satire play came together. Did you understand tragedy? Three tragedies and one comedy. Like that. And satire plays were usually based on mythological subjects. They were ancient plays which later developed into comedy. Satire plays later developed into comedy. Okay, and what is the structure of the Greek theater? I will unmute you in a while. Just keep listening now. What is the structure of the Greek theater? Koilon or theatron is the seats. It is there in your encyclopedia. Orchestra is this round space here. Thymele is that rectangle in the round space. It is the altar. Explanation is there in the encyclopedia. Then scene or skene, that is the building here. Proscenium is very important. This place is proscenium. That is where the action is happening. Proscenium is where the action is happening. Please read in the encyclopedia, okay? And diazoma is the passageway, between the seats. That is diazoma. Look at the structure of the Greek tragedy. So first I said Greek theater. That is where the tragedy is enacted. That is Greek theater. This is the text itself, the text called a tragedy. Tragedy has an initial part called prologue. Parados is where the chorus enters. Are you all sitting on a chair with a table in front of you? Are you writing with pen, whatever is necessary? It is not necessary that you write, but if you write something, it will help you to remember. Do not lie on your bed. Do not walk about. Do not sit where there is distraction. Do not be distracted. Okay, pay complete attention. Parados is where the chorus enters. And after that, there are five episodes. Episodes are the five acts. There are five acts. One, two, three, four, five episodes. The action is divided into five episodes. And in between the action, in between the episodes, there is stasima. Stasima is the singular. Stasima means plural. It is some singing in between the action, in between the acts. And there is no curtain in the Greek theater. So at the end, there is exodus, where everybody is going out. Everybody is moving out. That is called exodus. These are the four parts of Greek tragedy. Now, I am going to ask you a question. How would a play enacted in such a theater be different from an indoor theater? Somebody is saying play of light will be there. In outdoors, there will be light and darkness. Sometimes dark, sometimes light. Voice modulation is needed for outdoor, correct? Limited props are there. Actors will have to shout. Then settings could be changed. In indoor theater, setting could be changed. In outdoor theater, it could not be changed. And in outdoor theater, you need exaggerated actions. I'm reading out what people are telling me. Exaggerated acting should be there. Visual element is more. You have to dress up. Costumes are important in outdoor. Yeah. And in outdoor theater, more actors can be there. Whereas in indoor, it is a smaller space, so less actors. Audience interaction might be there in outdoor more because you can't control them. They're all standing everywhere. Now, the tragedians, Aeschylus, Sophocles, Euripides. Yesterday, somebody was asking in Rushati's game, who is Aeschylus? Now we know. Aeschylus is the father of Greek tragedy. When Aeschylus started writing, there was only one actor in a tragedy. Matlab, like a class, one teacher, only like that, one actor. And that actor will interact with the chorus. Actor, chorus, chorus, actor, actor, chorus. Like that acting would happen. Ayo, so boring, isn't it? But it was Aeschylus who introduced the second actor. Hooray! It became so interesting because two actors talking to each other, fighting with each other. Wow, it is interesting now. Aeschylus introduced the second actor. And Aristotle says, wow, Aeschylus brought variety into drama. So interesting. And chorus. Yesterday, Rushati and me brought variety into the class because we were both of them there. Sometimes Rushati, sometimes me. Then there is no boring. It is not boring, isn't it? So the chorus has less importance because the two actors are talking to each other, and Aeschylus has also made the costumes more elaborate. Sophocles, the second tragedian, he introduced one more actor, the third actor, but no more than three actors are there in a Greek tragedy. Okay? Aeschylus is the father of tragedy. In the competitions held at the festival of Dionysius or city Dionysia, Aeschylus always won the first prize. Aeschylus always won the first prize. His plays had a strong moral and religious basis. His plays were religious, moral. His most famous work was Orestia. Orestia, like Ramayana, is the story of Orestes. Huh? And Aeschylus's sons, Euphorion and Euaion, became tragic poets. Did you know that? You should read about Aeschylus in Wikipedia or Britannica, okay? Encyclopedia Britannica. Orestia is a trilogy, three plays. Agamemnon, The Libation Bearers, and Eumenides. These are the titles of the three plays. Libation Bearers is also called Koi Pheroi. Koi Pheroi. And there is also a satire play written along with Orestia, with these three plays. It is called Proteus. Proteus, that play is lost to us. We don't have it. What is the story of Orestia? Agamemnon, the Greek hero, is coming home from the Trojan War. Agamemnon is coming home. At that time, Agamemnon's wife, Clytemnestra, hates him because Agamemnon killed their daughter, Iphigenia. Who is this Clytemnestra? The twin sister of Helen of Troy. Okay? Leda the swan laid an egg. Have you heard of Leda and the swan? Leda was raped by Zeus. Who is Zeus? Zeus is the king of gods. Okay, Leda was raped by Zeus. And Leda laid an egg from which was born two girls, Clytemnestra and Helen of Troy. Both were born. Helen of Troy led to the Trojan War because Helen ran away with Paris. Helen is the wife of Menelaus. Menelaus is the prince of Greece at that time. And Menelaus's wife, she is. And she ran away with Paris. Paris is a Trojan prince. Okay, like India and Pakistan, Greece and Troy. Did you understand? And this is why Trojan War took place. So Clytemnestra is the sister of Helen, and she hates her husband because Agamemnon sacrificed to the gods their daughter Iphigenia. Iphigenia is their daughter. Did you understand? Iphigenia is their daughter. You can't see properly. I will use this. Okay. Iphigenia is their daughter. So Clytemnestra is angry, and then Clytemnestra killed Agamemnon. Okay, all that is given here. Agamemnon's children, Orestes and Electra, take revenge upon her. Orestes and Electra take revenge upon Clytemnestra. And then what happens? It is wrong to kill your mother, isn't it? Orestes kills Clytemnestra. And Orestes is haunted by Eumenides. They are like supernatural, creatures. Eumenides is also called the Furies. Eumenides or the Furies. There are three Furies. Furies are supernatural creatures like monsters. Okay? Because he killed his mother, because he did matricide. That is why they haunt him. Okay, I will clear the screen. I hope you understood. Other extant plays of Aeschylus are the Persians. These are all plays by Aeschylus. You don't have to read them. You can Google search a little bit if you want. If you don't do, also, it's fine. He wrote The Persians, The Suppliants, Seven Against Thebes. These are all names of plays. And a trilogy called Promethea. Promethea has three parts: Prometheus Bound, Prometheus Unbound, Prometheus the Fire Giver. Do you know the mythological story of Prometheus? Prometheus, there is a very interesting book in Bodhi Tree or Vallath books called Greek Mythology in a Day. If you don't know all these stories, it costs 100 rupees or 150 rupees or something. If you want, you can buy. If you don't want, no problem. If you Google search also, you will get these stories. Prometheus went against the rule of Zeus and he brought fire to human beings, for which he was punished. He was tied to a mountain and an eagle came and pecked at him. He ate his flesh. Prometheus. Which novel is subtitled The Modern Prometheus? Which novel is subtitled The Modern Prometheus? It is Frankenstein. Frankenstein is called The Modern Prometheus. Frankenstein is a novel by Mary Shelley. Okay, next writer is Sophocles. Sophocles also won prizes in dramatic competitions. He was believed to have written over 100 plays, most of them lost. He initially imitated Aeschylus, but later developed a style of his own. He was not just an imitator, he was a proper poet and playwright. His characters are more developed and individualistic than Aeschylus's characters. He is famous for the Theban trilogy. Thebes is the setting of these plays. That's why it's called Theban. Oedipus Rex or Oedipus Tyrannus, that is the first one. Oedipus at Colonus is the second one, and third is Antigone. Oedipus Rex or Oedipus Tyrannus, Oedipus at Colonus, and Antigone. Antigone, the third one, was written first. Now, Oedipus Tyrannus. Oedipus is the king of Thebes when the play is beginning. Oedipus is the king of Thebes. And he's very upset because his people are all dying of the plague. Everybody is dying around him. So he sends, do not read what is given here now. Just listen to me. So he sends Creon, his brother-in-law, to the Delphic Oracle. The Delphic Oracle, it is like a prophecy. They will give prophecy. So he sends Creon to find out why plague is killing everybody. And the Delphic Oracle says, you have to punish the murderer of the previous king, Laius. The previous king is Laius. You have to punish the murderer of the previous king. Oedipus says, of course I will punish. Who is the murderer? And he asks Tiresias. Tiresias says, I will not tell you. I will not answer your question. Oedipus is angry. He says, why don't you answer? Tell me, I need to know. But Tiresias refuses to answer. At that time, a messenger comes. A messenger comes saying, Oedipus's parents are dead, Polybus and Merope. You know, when Oedipus, in the past, there was a Delphic oracle about Oedipus. There was a prophecy about Oedipus that he will kill his father and marry his mother. When he hears that Polybus and Merope, his parents, are dead, Oedipus is actually relieved because now it means that he will not kill his father and marry his mother because they are dead. But then the messenger says, but they were not your real parents. Oedipus says, then who were my real parents? How do you know? And the messenger says, I took you as a baby from another shepherd and gave you to Polybus and Merope, so I know. Oedipus says, from whom did you take me? Who are my parents? And this messenger says, I don't know. At that time, Oedipus had already sent for one another man. You know, when Laius was killed, there was a shepherd there who witnessed that death, that murder. Laius, the former king, died. And when the former king died, Oedipus had come to Thebes. And he had become the king because he answered the riddle of the Sphinx. Okay? So he became the king and he married the widow of Laius. Now, I know that some of you did not fully understand. I will explain when I read the slide. Now, Oedipus is sending for that man who was there when Laius died. Okay? Laius is the former king. So here we have Laius. He is the former king. He was the husband of Jocasta. Okay, now Oedipus is the king of Thebes, not Laius, but Oedipus is now the king of Thebes. He is now married to Jocasta, the widow of Laius. And Oedipus is ready to punish the man who killed Laius. And he is sending for the witness, the eyewitness. So that man comes. And our first messenger says, "Are, this is the man from whom I took you as a baby." And Oedipus says, "From where? From whom did you take me?" And that man says, "I took you from Laius." At that time, by then, Jocasta has gone inside because Jocasta already understood that something is wrong. She went inside. She understood that this is Oedipus is actually her son. And Jocasta went inside. Oedipus understands that Laius is his father, and it is he who killed Laius, because once he had quarreled with a man at a junction and killed that man. That man was Laius. Oedipus understood that the prophecy has become true. And that moment when he is seeing, when he is seeing the truth, when he is understanding the truth, that is so traumatic. He knows that he has done that mistake. He goes inside. He does not know what to do. He goes inside and he sees Jocasta's body hanging. She has killed herself. Oedipus takes the pins from her dress and blinds himself. It is a very, very traumatic incident, traumatic moment in the play. And that is Oedipus Rex, or Oedipus Tyrannus. Now let me read out what is given on the slide. This play is originally in Greek. Robert Fagles has translated it. It is not there in your book. These slides are not there in your book. You can take the PDF from the course and use it. Okay. The play opens to show Oedipus addressing a priest and the citizens of Thebes who are suffering from the plague. Oedipus's opening speech begins, "Oh, my children." Look at the irony. He treats his own people as his children, but look at what he had to do to his own father and mother. He considers the people of Thebes as his children. And Creon, Oedipus's brother-in-law, returns from the Delphic oracle. Apollo had wanted the murderer of Laius to be banished. "Drive the corruption from the land. Don't harbor it any longer, past all cure." Like that, Apollo has said. Apollo is the god. Oedipus questions Creon. He says, "Who is the murderer? Laius's murderer should be punished. Who is the murderer?" He wants to know. Everybody knows that Laius was killed by thieves. And the Sphinx is a mythological creature. It asks the people to let go of the murder. And the Sphinx sat at the gates of Thebes, asking a riddle to passers-by. All this happened, and Oedipus vows to find the man and punish him. He does not know that it is himself. At this time, Chorus enters for the first time. Chorus enters and laments the plague and calls upon the gods to help them. And after this, there are five episodes. Remember? Oedipus has a great sense of justice. There is great dramatic irony because he does not know the truth. Did you understand? Because he does not know the truth, there is irony, great dramatic irony. And he is determined to bring justice, not knowing that he is the culprit. He does not know that he is the culprit. Oedipus makes some proclamations. "If anybody is here who is the murderer, you can reveal yourself. I will not punish you. Those who hide the truth will be severely punished." Like this, many things he says. And look at his sense of justice in his dialogues. "I fight for the god and for the murdered man." He wants to do this for the man who was murdered. He will go to any extent to punish him. You should read it on your own, okay? And then the blind prophet Tiresias, who knows everything, he refuses to tell the truth. Oedipus flies into a rage and flings insults at Tiresias. "Why don't you tell me the truth?" Tiresias says, "I will not tell you the truth. I cannot tell you." And Oedipus is misunderstanding. He's suspecting a conspiracy. Why is he not telling the truth? Like that, This is all so human. All this happens to us also. Sometimes without knowing the truth, we'll do a lot of wrong things. Oedipus attacking Tiresias, that speech I have given here. Tiresias' reply I have given here. Okay, because we don't have all the time in the world. I'm not reading it. You should read it on your own. And then Oedipus realizes that he is the murderer and blinds himself. That is the end of Oedipus Tyrannus or Oedipus Rex. Antigone leads Oedipus out of Thebes. That is the painting. Antigone leading Oedipus out of Thebes. And in the next play, Oedipus at Colonus, which was the last of the Theban plays to be written. The writing was in this order. Antigone first. They asked this in net once. First Antigone, then Oedipus Rex, then Oedipus at Colonus. Here, Oedipus dies. Oedipus is a miserable beggar. And he dies in this play. He is mourned by his daughters. Read this on your own. It's not very important, but somewhat important. And look at Antigone. Antigone is the daughter of Oedipus. Antigone is by Sophocles. But yesterday we saw that Antigone is also a play written by Jean Anouilh. Remember? Yesterday in Rishati's game, we saw that it is also written by A-N-O-U-I-L-H. Jean Anouilh. Also Sophocles. Right. So Antigone is the daughter of Oedipus. We also have another daughter, Ismene. Antigone and Ismene. Also, it is there in your encyclopedia, I think. And there are two sons, Polynices and Eteocles. Polynices and Eteocles. They are the two sons. And what happens is Polynices and Eteocles fight and kill each other. King Creon, the brother-in-law Creon is now king. King Creon gives Eteocles a good burial, but he leaves Polynices' dead body at the gates of Thebes. He refuses to bury it. Antigone is so sad. She wants to bury her brother's dead body. And Antigone goes against the king and buries the body, for which she will be punished. So Antigone then kills herself. She hangs herself. Look at what happened. Creon was warned by Tiresias, don't do this, don't do this. Creon exceeded his limits. Creon refused Polynices' body to be buried. Polynices' body was not buried. Are you able to follow? Those who cannot follow, you should watch the video one more time, okay? Slowly you will be able to understand. We have to reach a level where all the questions will be easy. When they ask you in English, very difficult academic English it will be. You should be able to answer. So while you listen to me, you will also pick up your English if you are from Hindi medium. Don't worry, okay? Right. Creon's son Haemon loved her. There you go. Creon's son Haemon loved her. And then he kills himself. Because Antigone is now dead, he kills himself. Haemon's mother, Creon's wife, Eurydice, also kills herself. So what happens? Creon loses his entire family. Creon's stubbornness and pride thus destroy him. He is now destroyed. That is the story of Antigone. Did you understand? Antigone is standing up against the king's power. Other extend plays, extend means existing. Other existing plays, many are lost. These are existing. Ajax, Women of Trachis, we are talking about Sophocles, Electra, Philoctetus. So we talked about, and also please, please, please Google, read again, read more, look up all these doubts in Google also. Make it a habit. Okay. Now, we talked about Aeschylus, Sophocles, and Euripides. Euripides was the author of over 90 plays. He wrote a lot of plays, but much of it is lost. He took the major step of depicting mythological heroes as ordinary people with inner lives and motives. He was a revolutionary writer, Euripides. He took the major step of depicting heroes and gods as ordinary people. There was a psychological element. There was a lot of human element in his depiction of mythological heroes. Euripides. He did that with intellectual daring. He's often compared to Socrates. Neither Socrates nor Euripides cared for conventions. They questioned convention. Convention means what everybody does. Comic poets like Aristophanes lampooned Euripides as well as Socrates in their place. Comic poets like Aristophanes lampooned Euripides. Lampooned means made fun of. Aristophanes is a comic playwright, poet and playwright. Aeschylus, Sophocles, Euripides are tragic poets. Tragic tragedies they wrote. Aristophanes wrote comedies. Aristophanes lampooned or ridiculed Euripides as well as Socrates. Euripides' most famous play is Medea. That is very famous, Medea. Medea is the wife of Jason. Okay, Jason is a very famous story in Greek mythology. Jason and the Golden Fleece. So, Medea, and if you can afford it, I would say you should buy the Greek mythology book, because all these are clearly given there. Because if you don't know the Greek mythology, many times in English literature, you will not understand what is the story. So, otherwise, you should make it a point to look them up. Then also it is fine. But you should not just ignore them. Medea and Jason. Jason alone has stories about himself in mythology. Now, Jason leaves Medea for Glossy. Jason is leaving Medea for Glossy, another woman. Medea is so angry. She sends a poisoned wedding gown to Glossy and kills her. Glossy's father also gets killed. He is another Creon. Glossy's father also gets killed. Medea is not happy. Jason was very close to his sons. Jason loved his sons. To torture Jason, Medea is killing her own children. She kills her own children. Dekho, one child, second child, he's going to kill them with a knife. So that is the story of blood revenge of Medea. Okay? Some extant plays of Euripides are Hippolytus, Andromache, the Trojan women, Iphigenia in Tauris, Phoenician women, Orestes. Orestes, he also wrote. These are all important plays of Euripides, but you don't have to remember them very much. They are not important in the exam. Bacchae, Cyclops. Now the comic playwright Aristophanes. Aristophanes lived in the 5th century BC. 5th century BC, he wrote comedy, which came to be called old comedy. Because later on, Menander wrote new comedy. Two comedy writers, Aristophanes and Menander. Menander's came to be called new comedy. Aristophanes's came to be called old comedy. Aristophanes wrote about actual people, actual things that happened. And Menander wrote about stereotypical characters. Menander wrote about stereotypical characters. What do you mean by stereotype? A cliched, a repeated, same kind of character always. In our Hindi movies, etc., we have stereotypical heroes and heroines. Same. In this movie also, a hero is like that. In that movie also, a hero is like that. Then it is a stereotype. And Aristophanes wrote about actual people, whereas Menander wrote about stereotypical characters. Okay, and Menander's new comedy became comedy of manners. Comedy of manners, that is a genre. G-E-N-R-E, genre means a kind of comedy. Aristophanes wrote 11 surviving plays. Aristophanes wrote 11 surviving plays. One important play is The Clouds, where Socrates is made fun of. Socrates is made fun of in Clouds. Another important play is The Wasps. Through the character Philocleon, in Wasps, he makes fun of Athenians' fondness for legal lawsuits, legal cases. Athenians always wanted legal cases. He is making fun of the Athenians for this in the wasps. In clouds, Socrates. In wasps, about legal cases. Then Lysistrata. Lysistrata is an interesting story. One woman called Lysistrata. Pay attention, everybody. Don't lie down. Don't go anywhere. Pay attention. Lysistrata is one woman who is ending the Peloponnesian War by getting women of the land to deny sex to their men. You know, the Peloponnesian War is happening. When the Peloponnesian War is happening, women are fed up of the men and their war. They want the men to stop the war. Lysistrata tells the other women, let us stop giving sexual favors to men. We won't have sex with men. So men will listen to us. Like that, they will stop war. And this is a funny story where this actually happens. Clear? Then he wrote The Frogs. Aristophanes wrote The Frogs. The Frogs is about Dionysius, the god himself, dressed in an absurd fashion, going to Hades to bring back the best playwright from death. Because at that time, what happens is, no playwright is good. Every playwright is so bad. So what happens? Dionysius thinks, I have to go bring back a good playwright. So he's going to Hades or hell. Hell, another name is Hades, like Naraga. And he is trying to find the best playwright. The best playwright. Is it Aeschylus or Euripides? Aeschylus or Euripides? There is a fight between the two. There is a verbal fight between the two regarding who is the better poet. Did you understand? That is The Frogs. And finally, who wins? Aeschylus wins. Aeschylus is the better poet. This is a scene from comedy. Clear? Now, Menander. Menander is the writer of new comedy. Aristophanes wrote old comedy. Remember, Menander was later. He lived in 4th century BC. What is new comedy? Generalized situations and stock characters. Stock character or stereotypical character, same kind of character. Whereas Aristophanes wrote about actual people, Socrates, you know, actual situations, the Peloponnesian War. But Menander never did that. He created generalized situations and stock characters. In contrast to old comedy of Aristophanes, which dealt with real individuals and local issues. Menander's new comedy eventually led to the development of comedy of manners. What is comedy of manners? Comedy of manners means upper class characters, master-slave relationships is a genre. Witty dialogues. In the history of English literature, there is one period where comedy of manners flourished a lot. That is called Restoration comedy. The period where comedy of manners flourished. That is called Restoration comedy. Did you understand, everyone? Restoration comedy. That is 17th century, late 17th century. Now, the plays of Menander. Much of Menander's work is lost. Only some fragments are there. Discolos, Samia, Perichaeromene. All these are in your PDF, which you will get in the course. But in the encyclopedia, in some parts, there are lots of new information. Okay? Especially in the later chapters, you will find a lot of information in the encyclopedia. PDF will be less. Later chapters. Perichaeromene. Dekho, it is a play by Menander. It means the girl with her hair cut short. Comedy. Okay? You don't have to remember these names. Just simply, I showed you. Just so that you get some general knowledge. David Malouf wrote Ransom. Then David Malouf himself wrote another work, An Imaginary Life. Then Pat Barker, Madeline Miller, James Joyce. This is homework. You should find out for me, okay? Adaptations of Greco-Roman classical works. All right, another writer is there called Pindar. Pindar. He lived at the beginning of the 5th century BC. Many of you might have heard of Pindaric odes. Pindaric odes means odes that are very formal. Odes that are very formal. Encomiastic. What do you mean by encomiastic? Encomiastic means in praise of somebody. Encomiastic means in praise of somebody. Then Pindaric odes are praising somebody, accompanied by music and dance, written in bold, formal language. Pindaric odes are written in bold, formal language. There are three types of stanzas. Pindaric odes are chanted by the chorus. Pindaric odes are chanted by the chorus. Did you understand? There is strophe when the chorus is moving to the right. There is antistrophe when the chorus is moving to the left. And there is epode when the chorus is standing in the middle. Strophe, antistrophe, epode. Did you understand? Those are the three stanzaic patterns. That means three types of stanzas. Now, if anybody is asking me, what is a stanza? It means the number of lines arranged in a particular way in a poem. A major kind of Pindaric odes are called the victory odes, written about the Olympic Games. Remember the Olympic Games, they were there in ancient Greece, hana? And Olympic Games, people won prizes, etc. Pindaric odes were written praising these people. Okay, Pindaric odes have a strict stanza, strophe, antistrophe, epode. There is in the 17th century, Abraham Cowley. What did Abraham Cowley do? Abraham Cowley wrote a book called Pindaric Odes. Look at the spelling. Abraham Cowley wrote a book called Pindaric Odes, where he did not write strophe, antistrophe, epode. Instead, he wrote in whatever way he wanted. Pindaric odes written by Abraham Cowley like that without following the stanzaic pattern. That is called irregular ode. Dekho yahan. Irregular ode it is called. Clear everybody? Pindaric odes that are written without the three stanzaic patterns. It is called irregular ode. Developed by Abraham Cowley. Along with the videos, you will have access to the PDFs throughout. That means once you download a PDF, how can I take it away from your phone? It will be there in your phone. Menander used stereotypes, correct. Aristophanes and Sophocles were in the same era, yes. Adaptations of any Greek play. Is there a difference between panegyric and encomiastic ode? Not much, but there might be minute differences. Can you repeat the position of chorus? Whatever I have taught, don't ask me to repeat again and again, but I will say once, strophe is right, antistrophe is left, epode is in the middle. Protagonist's name in Lysistrata is Lysistrata. When a chorus is singing, they will dance to the right and sing. That stanza is called strophe. When they sing, dancing to the left, it is called antistrophe. When they stand in the middle, it is called epode. Is the only difference between old and new comedy the characters? Yeah, mostly. Abraham Cowley wrote Pindaric odes not to mock Pindaric ode. He just developed a new style, that's all. He developed a new style. Then Plato. Plato was born in an aristocratic family in the island of Aegina near Athens. The real name of Plato was Aristocles. There is a mistake in your encyclopedia. This is the correct one. I've changed it. Aristocles means glorious. Plato means broad-shouldered. He received excellent education and like all men at that time, he came under the influence of Socrates. And after the death of Socrates, Plato left Athens, traveled to Italy, Sicily, Egypt, and later he returned to Athens. In 387 BC, Plato founded the Academy. It is the name of the school that Plato founded, the Academy. The academy became very famous due to the Neoplatonists. The academy became very famous due to the Neoplatonists and functioned until AD 6th century. This is 6th century. At Plato's academy, subjects like mathematics, philosophy, astronomy, biology, political theory, etc. were taught. These are the different subjects that are taught. At the gate of the academy, it was written, "Let no one without mathematics enter." Mathematics was so important in academy. Aristotle was a student there and later a teacher. Did you understand all this? So Plato's academy went on after Plato. Neoplatonists, made it famous. All the works of Plato are called dialogues. The works of Plato are called the dialogues of Plato. There are 36 dialogues that have survived. Usually, why are they called dialogues? Because Plato is in conversation. Socrates is a character in all the dialogues. He is in conversation with somebody else. Always Socrates is talking to somebody else. Like that, the dialogues are written. So they are called Socratic dialogues. Did you understand? They are called Socratic dialogues. They deal always with some moral or philosophical problem. I will talk about Plato and Socrates, Plato and his dialogues in criticism class also. There are altogether 36 dialogues. Republic, Protagoras, Apology, Gorgias, Ion. These are some of the existing dialogues. Dialogue is like an essay or a novel. It is a genre. A dialogue, famous dialogue, is Republic. Republic is about the idea that good life is possible only in an ideal state. When the state is ideal, then our life will also be ideal. The aim of good life is justice. That is the theme of Republic. Justice is important. How can we be just individuals? How can we be just as a nation? That is the theme. Plato never wrote a single work on poetry alone. On poetry alone, he never wrote anything. His ideas on poetry are scattered in his many dialogues. Plato's ideas on poetry are there, scattered in many dialogues. The School of Athens is a painting by Raphael. The School of Athens is a painting by Raphael. In the middle of that painting, you have Plato and Aristotle. Plato is pointing upwards, the ideal reality, that is important. Aristotle is showing the ground and saying the physical reality is also important. Aristotle is saying Plato is an idealist and Aristotle is a realist. Plato is an idealist. He says ideal reality is important. Don't worry, we will learn all this in criticism class also. Okay, Plato believed in two-tiered metaphysics. Plato believed in two-tiered metaphysics. That means there are two levels, like in two-tiered AC. There are two levels. You know, one level is physical reality, another level is ideal reality. Clear, everybody? Now, Plato believed that the ideal reality is what is important. He showed the ideal reality as the realm of the sun. You know, we are all inside a cave. Outside the cave, it is sun. We can't see what is outside. Like that stories he said. Don't worry about that today. Okay, let us come to Aristotle. Aristotle was also born in a well-to-do family. His father was a physician, a doctor. So he had a very scientific approach. When Aristotle was 17, he was sent to Plato's academy to study. There he was a student. Like you are a student with us now. Aristotle studied in academy. After Plato's death, Aristotle left the academy. He went away, traveled. He went in the philosophical circles of some philosophers. He learned from there. He met Hermias, one famous philosopher of that time. From there, he learned a lot of things and he then moved on. And then he engaged in biological studies along with Theophrastus. You're all thinking, why is it important? All this is not important. We need to know only about poetics. Don't think like that. We should know the context. We should know all these background stories. Today, only some of my previous students told me, what is the importance of Lyceum and after? That is not an important section. My heart actually broke. You should not think like that. These minute details of how people lived, how people wrote, these are all important in the exam also. They might ask you in statement form. It is because you don't know these background things that you are not passing the exam easily. Because you don't have general knowledge then. If only you know the background stories, will you have general knowledge? Only with general knowledge, you will be able to understand the question and answer intelligently. Clear, everybody? So remember to not shy away from, not to escape from all this information. It is actually important because we have to understand in that sense, because then studying will become easier. Otherwise, you'll have to mug up like idiots. You will have to, tax your brain. Whereas intelligent scholars, they will understand the stories, understand the background, read more. Like that, we should all learn. Clear what I'm saying? Okay. So much we have to learn like that. So we are talking about Aristotle. Aristotle now came to Macedonia, his place where he became the tutor to the Alexander, the prince of Macedon. Alexander was the prince of Macedon, the son of Philip, the king of Macedon. Who is this Alexander? Alexander the Great. He became a conqueror later. Back in Athens, he founded his own school, Lyceum. Lyceum is Aristotle's school that he founded, where many great works were written at this time. Why I am teaching you this slide, Lyceum and after, is because I am making you understand. Maybe they will not ask a question from this slide, but this kind of background is important for every writer, for every major period, movement, text. I am setting the stage. I am helping you to understand what is important, how to read, how to understand. In between all this, if you become stressed, if you create trouble, if you ask too many things, if you don't understand the things in the right perspective, if you become confused, you give yourself some time. I'm trying to teach you swimming. Okay, I'm putting you in the water. As soon as I put you in the water, if you, without relaxing, without letting me teach you, if you start, throwing up your legs like that, you will only drown. Relax. Okay, learn all this slowly. Don't to think too much right at the beginning. All right. So he founded his school, Lyceum. It is in Lyceum that he wrote most of his great works. His students and associates carried out research on philosophical and scientific topics here. It is so amazing to know all these things. Then Alexander died. Then there was a lot of power imbalance in the Mediterranean region. Aristotle had to leave Athens again. So he was in the middle of a lot of turmoil. He was actively engaged in the politics of his time. That is why there is so much of politics and culture and everything in Aristotle's writing. Even when he talks about poetics, he's talking about so many other things. They can ask you a very intelligent question like that. I will ask you in the quiz. Only if you know all these things, you will be able to answer like that. I will ask you. Finally, he died at the age of 62. What Westerners know of Aristotle today is actually what they got from Averroes in the 12th century. Who is Averroes? Averroes is an Arab philosopher. Very, very important for us also. Ibn Rushd. That is Averroes. Ibn Rushd is an important character in some of the works of Salman Rushdie. He is the protagonist in one of the works of Salman Rushdie. You find out as a homework. In which work of Salman Rushdie is there a love story between Averroes or Ibn Rushd and a fairy? That is the setting of one of the novels of Salman Rushdie. Okay, you should find out. Okay, so If you shut your eyes to Averroes and all the new things, you will never understand things in the right perspective. Now you can cross-connect. If you understand all these things, you will be able to get the entire picture. Okay, so Aristotle lived at this time. Aristotle learned, sorry, Aristotle's works came to us after a long time through the works of Averroes in the 12th century. The works known in Aristotle's own lifetime were 12 dialogues modeled on those of Plato. At that time, there were 27 dialogues modeled on Plato. But those 27 dialogues are lost to us. We don't have them now. All we have now is notes that he wrote. Poetics, rhetoric, Nicomachean ethics. These are like lecture notes of Aristotle. Those are small works of Aristotle. We will study poetics in criticism class also. Poetics was written for serious students in the manner of notes for lectures. It was first edited. Poetics was first edited by Andronicus, one man, in the first century BC. Poetics, the famous work of Aristotle, was written by, was edited by Andronicus. There were at this time other Greek historians. You should know this is general knowledge. Herodotus is a very major historian. Thucydides is another historian. Polybius is another historian. They are famous Greek historians. Okay, like our Sanskrit, ancient literature of Sanskrit and ancient Sanskrit poetics, etc. All this is a proper foundation for our understanding of English literature. And also Plutarch. Plutarch's lives was the model for, was the source for Shakespeare's Roman plays. Shakespeare's Roman plays were modeled on Plutarch's lives. Parallel lives of the noble Greeks and Romans. That is the name of the book that Plutarch wrote. Now, Hellenistic period. Hellenic means Greece. Hellenistic is the third period after the classical period. After the classical period, we have the Hellenistic period, the time from Alexander the Great onwards, up to the Roman annexation of Greece, up to Rome ruling Greece. That is called Hellenistic period. In the Hellenistic period, Roman classicism flourished. Roman Empire came into being. In the Hellenistic period, Roman Empire came into being in Rome. Are you following me? At first, there was Greek classicism. And after that, Roman classicism. I will teach you Roman classicism only tomorrow because I don't want to overburden you. Roman classicism and Roman Empire both flourished during the Hellenistic period. At this time, Rome is ruled by the Greeks. Ulta, ulta. Greece is ruled by the Romans. At this time, Greece is ruled by the Romans. Did you understand? Now, at this time, so many writers, philosophers were there in Greece. So many writers, philosophers, they all inspired the Romans. The Romans wanted to follow the Greek. The Romans followed the Greek in every way. The Greek culture, the Greek philosophy, Greek poetry, Greek tragedy, everything the Romans followed. Did you understand? There were three philosophical schools, which I will talk to you about later. The Stoic philosophy, the Epicurean philosophy, the skeptical philosophy, the cynical philosophy, cynicism, skepticism, stoicism. All these schools of philosophy were there in Greece, which were greatly influential on Rome. Did you understand? So that brings us to the end of the Greek classical period. You have one homework to look up the adaptations and retellings of Roman Greek plays, not Roman Greek plays, by different modern writers. Okay, right.